Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It is October. The colors are changing. The mums are in full bloom. And your garden is in just as much need of TLC as ever. Joining us today to talk about that and answer your questions is Ohio's garden sage, Deborah Knapke. Deborah, welcome back to the show.
Always glad to be here.
I am armed with Gardening Month by Month in Ohio. Mm-hmm. One of the books you co-wrote with Allison Beck, and also Best Garden Plants for Ohio, another one of the books. But you've got a couple of whoppers over there yourself.
Yeah. Well, I have the biggest book on bulbs possible to buy.
And that's actually not the name of the book.
It's just called Bulbs, Revised Edition by John Bryan. And then the Organic Lawn Care Manual by Paul Tukey, which is a wonderful read. And more people are going towards organic lawn care, so I thought I'd bring it in case there are questions.
So if you have any questions about organic lawn care or bulb planting, tis the season to plant your bulbs or anything. But she's especially armed for bulbs and lawn care issues. We had several calls yesterday about trees. We had a lot of calls we didn't get to, too, but we had a lot of emails we didn't get to, and I'm going to try to dig those up and get some of those questions answered today. But if you have any questions about trees as well, Deborah's here
I'll do my best.
She'll do her best. So give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. You can find us on Twitter. You can tweet me at Ann Fisher WOSU. So let's just start out generally.
Okay.
With the general overall, hasn't there been a lot of rain, and hasn't it been a hassle
sure
to get into your garden conversation?
Usually this time of fall, I'm thinking, oh boy, I better go out and water my conifers to get them nice and well ready for the winter. Haven't had to do that this year, and I won't have to. And that's nice because I have a lot of conifers, dwarf conifers that have more shallow root systems, but there's also a wonderful crop of weeds in my garden, and tomorrow I have a tour in my garden. Fortunately, they are all gardeners, and I hope they will understand, and I will pay them to weed for me. If you see a weed, especially in seed, just
a nickel a weed.
Yeah, nickel a weed. I'll pay. But it's just been, you go out there and you squish.
Yeah.
But even now, even more importantly, because of all this rain and this coolness, we still have disease organisms going, and mush and mold and you name it. And it's a good idea if you see something not looking right or diseased, you need to get that out of the garden. But I tend to leave a lot of my plants up for winter interest. Bunch of them are, though, laying down right now because of the rain.
I thought it was some animals coming into my garden and just laying there. Some of them are so flat.
Yeah, well, they're so soaked. They just kind of lean over. The rain's beating them down. All my liatris, which is usually standing up, and some of my purple cone flowers that I leave up for the goldfinches, whatever, they're laying down. So some of that I will take up. Others I will leave for them. That just means the birds will be closer to the ground when they're going after the seed, which is not always good from a predator point of view.
Is there anything that you tried last year that now you're at the end of the growing, most of the growing season now, and something that you tried, you looked at, it worked or it didn't work?
I'm going to change what I'm doing in my forest garden. My forest garden is I'm doing perennial food, either shrubs, herbs, perennials that are food, that are tasty. The issue is some of them did not work, and I still have to assess what's going on. It was kind of a crazy season with that heat in the middle, so I have to see if
and it was a rainy spring.
It was a rainy spring, mm-hmm. And so things kind of changed around. I lost some lavenders this year, too.
I was going to ask you about lavenders.
Yeah, I lost some lavenders midsummer to what I think was either Phytophthora or Rhizoctonia. They were fantastic in the spring.
And Phytophthora. Yeah.
F and a. No, it's actually pH.
Oh.
And a whole bunch of pHs and some Fs and some THs. And it's a awful to spell. But both of them are soil-borne fungi
okay.
that attack the roots and essentially turn them into mush. and that's technical terms here. And once that happens, the plant just dies. You sort of see the plant looking peaked, and then you look at it a couple days later, and it's dead. And that's what happened to a group of lavenders all in the same place. And that's often an indication, and they were different types of lavenders, often an indication of something going on with the roots. And I pulled one up, and there were no roots, which, yeah.
You know, I'm having my continual problem with herbs. I've talked with you about these before. This time I moved the herbs more into the sun, but I'm wondering now if there's a problem with planting very much of anything around this really super hardy oregano I've had going there for 3 or 4 or 5 years. It's kind of almost like a ground cover. I keep pulling it back every year. That flourishes, but anything I put near it doesn't.
I don't know if oreganos are allelopathic, which means that they give off something from their roots, like a black walnut,
right,
that diminishes other plants' ability to grow. I'd have to look into that, but I do know that they do form a very dense mat. And so other things that try to come up through them aren't very successful, which makes them a fantastic weed barrier. So if someone's looking for a fragrant, tasty ground cover, oregano will do that for you because weeds don't come up through them well. But the downside is that then getting some other things to grow can be a problem. You might just have to rip some of it out.
Really dig it out.
Dig it out. Take the roots out because it'll come back from the roots.
Yeah.
It's in the mint family, if that gives you any indication of its tenacity.
Yes, it does give me a big indication of its tenacity. Vivian in Grove City, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Vivian.
Hi. Hi. I haven't planted lantana before, although I really like it. And I did this spring, and I have some beautiful plants. Wondering if there's any way I can keep them alive during the winter?
There are a couple things you can do. You can dig it up. You may be bringing in some of your garden friends in with you, so be prepared for a few pill bugs or something like that. But cut it back. Just take the, really cut it back hard. Bring it in, put it in a sunny window. Hold back the water a little bit. Don't soak it, but don't let it go bone dry. Lantanas tend to want to be drier than wetter anyways. They need good drainage. So when you put in some potting soil, make sure it's ones that have chunks in it, not ones that are very fine. Lantana will, the roots will get choked. Put it in that sunny window. Some of the leaves will come back. Towards the spring, give it quarter strength of some compost tea, and maybe it'll go through. I have brought lantanas through, although they look pretty scraggly, but they catch up. They're actually a tender shrub. They're not a herbaceous plant, so you're dealing with a woody shrub that you're trying to bring in, and they're not always happy about coming inside.
You can't leave it out, though.
No.
Any way to cover it up to keep it outside?
No, it's a Zone 7, Zone 8. It's indigenous to Mexico, Central America, Upper South America. It likes it warm. It doesn't like cold ground, and so the first real deep freeze we have where that top 2 to 4 inches of the ground freezes, you will have a dead lantana. It won't go through. So you need to bring it in if you want to save it. Or you could take cuttings and start it from cuttings, which would be another
idea. Just in a bottle of water, that kind of a thing?
I usually use a potting soil mix to start cuttings and put them in a sunny window and keep them moist but not wet. And then if all else fails, there'll be more of them next year in the garden center.
Okay, Vivian, thanks
a
lot.
Oh, dear. Thank you.
You're
Bye-bye.
Welcome.
Bye. Getting back to the lavender, you did write about that once. I've got one of the articles you wrote. You said, my love affair with lavender and other sub-shrubs began with my master's thesis. So you said you're not sure what happened this year, but in general, talk about what we should be doing with our lavender now.
Right now, if you want to snip off some of the flowers, the late blooming flowers, bring them in, that's great. Or if you have some buds and you want to dry those, that's great. Do not cut them back hard at this time. The best time to cut back lavender into the actual shrub is after it blooms the first time, late June, early July.
Okay.
I do, if I see something that's obviously dead at any time, I take that out. But I only do a hard pruning in the summer. If you prune it now, it's a signal for it to try to shoot out new growth if we get a warm spell. It's a subshrub. And subshrubs are kind of a funny in-between plant between the herbaceous plants and the shrubs. And they act a little bit differently. So that's lavender in a nutshell. Do not transplant it now. Transplanting is good in the spring and in the summer, but not now. So that's lavender.
My guest is Deborah Konapke. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. If you have a question or comment for her about your garden, your yard, just about anything to do with outdoor planting, you can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. My associate producer, Amy Jurevich, found the emails I was looking for yesterday from the folks who didn't get their questions answered.
It looks like there's
answered.
A lot there.
Not that bad. It was a busy day.
Yes.
There are four.
Okay. Oh, boy. All right.
One is from Fred in Worthington. He says, I regularly fertilize my lawn and flowers, but not my trees. Should I fertilize my sycamore, locust, crab apples, and sweet gum? And if so, how? And he says, by the way, I like my sweet gum. There was a little sweet gum debate on the air yesterday.
I'm sure because of the spiny fruits.
Right,
and
right.
You either love them or hate them.
Right. It's like something out of a Dr. Seuss mm-hmm. book, as far as I'm concerned. But.
It is. Fertilizing trees. If it's a younger tree and we've had some tough weather, I would suggest a fall fertilization program. And usually it's done in the October to November timeframe, I believe. I'd have to look up to make sure. And maybe that's something I should post on Facebook as to fall. I'm going to put this a note to myself, fall fertilization programs for trees. If you have an ailing tree, fall fertilization is nice, especially root feeding, injection feeding at the root level into the soil. A little bit of surface compost never hurts. At about 1 to 2 inches, the organisms in the soil will take it down to the uppermost roots. And if your tree is really in trouble, I suggest you call an arborist and get him or her to take a look at it and make suggestions. If you have an established tree, usually they don't need a fertilization program. But with your sycamore, if you had double anthracnose this year, which some of them did because of our crazy spring weather, it might benefit from a fall fertilizer injection program.
Okay, Fred, I hope you're listening. I hope that helped. My guest, once again, Deborah Konapke. She's the author of several books, including co-author of Best Garden Plants for Ohio and Gardening Month by Month in Ohio. If you have a question or comment for her, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, Euro leaders make a deal on debt. The president goes it alone on economic fixes. Occupy Wall Street under pressure. Our weekly news roundtable goes behind the headlines. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point begins later this afternoon at 1 o'clock on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today. 39 degrees in downtown Columbus. It should warm up to a high of 52 with some sunshine this afternoon. Clouds tonight and cold, a low of 32 degrees. Partly sunny for Saturday, a high of 51. And sunshine on Sunday with a high of 54.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about your autumn garden and your autumn yard with Ohio's Garden Sage, Deborah Kanapke. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email me at allsides@wosu.org. We had a couple calls from folks who were in their cars and who didn't want to talk, stay on the phone. So we'll honor their safety, you know, conscientiousness, and answer those questions. First one is from Julie. She says, will willowing thorn plants destroy concrete? I have no idea what she's talking about.
Willowing thorn plants. Golly, that could be raspberries. That could be smilax.
That's the danger, Julie, of trying to answer. We're not sure what you mean.
Name, Julie, if you have a chance when you get to your destination to give us a call back, that would be fantastic. That could also be multiflora rose. So let me know what it is, and we'll try to answer that.
Okay. And then from David, he wants to know, can he maintain 3 Jewish bridal veils in the winter?
Jewish bridal veils in the winter. That has been a indoor plant. Is it also the Tahitian bridal veil with the really? Yeah. I'm asking him this. So when he gets to his destination, if he needs to call for clarification, but it has those very small leaves with like a purple underside and beautiful little tiny white flowers. It's so delicate. Bring it in. What it needs inside is it doesn't like our very dry winters inside the house. So put it someplace where it can get some moisture. Some humidity. Misting helps, or having a big bowl of beautiful stones with water in it so that the air evaporates out of it by your bridal veil, if that's what you have.
Okay. I just want to tell the callers, try to hang in there. We're trying to get to all your calls. It might be a minute or so, but we're trying to get to them. Tim in Granville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Tim.
Yes. I just had a question on raspberries. Mm-hmm. If this is the correct time prune them, or in the spring, because I've read both.
And you will read both. It all depends on who you talk to.
Okay.
I look at my raspberries, and if I notice that there are any split canes or canes that are broken or look diseased, have any kind of little black dots on it, which might indicate fungus, those go out now. You do not want them to overwinter in the garden, and I put them in my bad compost pile, because the raspberries often carry a lot of pathogens on the cane. So if you notice any of that, definitely take any of those out. There are some people, though, that don't like to take them down to the ground all the way, because that leaves the crown susceptible to more damage. Having the cane up there kind of gives the crown a little bit of protection. So if you do take them down to about 4 to 6 inches. So that's kind of the reason why some people say fall because of disease issues, and some people say spring because of overwintering issues. If you have any concern about overwintering, and this is the first year your raspberries have been there, take down any broken, diseased canes and then put some straw over it, and that will help.
Okay, yeah, they've been there for quite a while.
Okay.
What I think I did last year is I cut them down in the fall to about a foot.
Okay.
That was it. And they didn't seem to do as well as they had other years, but I don't know if it was something else or just...
We've had a crazy year this year. The rain was good for a while, but it just stayed cool, and raspberries really like it when the ground warms up. And so we had an interesting year with our fruit crops.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Tim. 614-292-8513 if you want to make that call now and talk to Deborah Kanapke. And Julie did call back. She says it's a willowing ram horn plant.
A willowing ram horn
plant. And Julie, she wants to know if it damages concrete.
I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to Facebook you on this. Look on the All Sides page. I will put what I do is the day of or the day after, I put notes on to some of the questions that I needed to look up a little bit more. I do not know what that common name, what plant that actually is. So take a look at the All Sides Facebook page later today or tomorrow.
And Deborah, you're very rarely stumped.
Oh, it happens. Okay. See, I'm not as good with common names. I will admit it.
Yeah.
And give me a genus I can fake it almost all the time.
Give me a genus and I will give you the deer in the headlights response. Judy in Baltimore, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. Yeah. We just moved to Ohio last year, so we inherited our garden, and we don't really, every time a new plant grows, it's a surprise. And so
where'd you move from, Judy?
Charlottesville, Virginia.
Okay.
Okay, so some changes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're from upstate New York, so weather is here is familiar. But anyway, so this one area has been completely taken over by morning glories that we didn't know were there. And I don't know what to do. I mean, we have, I mean, truly, they're practically pulling the deck off of our front porch. I mean, they're everywhere. Mm-hmm. What do we do when they're brown and gross? Do we have to rip them all out to keep them from doing that next year?
You really want to. In fact, you may be a little bit too late for some of them because of they've already dropped some of their seeds. So this is what you need to do. You need to take off as much as you can, and either it goes to a bad compost pile, because you put in your good compost pile, you'll have morning glories everywhere. Now, were these morning glories or bindweed?
Oh, I have no idea. I just know they're purple and have those little trumpet flowers. Like
okay, then that's morning glory.
Morning glory.
That is, since they're purple. And they're bigger, like in about 2 to 4 inches in diameter.
I think so.
Okay, good. Because bindweed is another, it's almost as bad. Fortunately, morning glories are annuals. And so what you are going to fight is its seeds. So, so you need to take off as much as you can. Put those seeds where the sun doesn't shine.
Okay.
And then next year when you see all the new shoots coming up, you're just going to go out with your cup of tea or a glass of wine, and you're going to just take them out. You're going to have your hoe sitting right there so that you don't even have to go get it and think about it, and just hoe them out. And you can even leave them on the ground so that they nourish the ground of which they came out of.
So we have this big, we live out in the country, and we have a big 1 acre patch that we're just letting turn to meadow.
Mm-hmm.
If we put the stuff we pull up with seeds in there, the grass is probably already about 3 feet tall. Mm-hmm. Would it, is that enough no sun kind of thing, or would
no,
it take over the meadow? Grass?
It would take over the meadow.
Okay.
You never would mind. Have nothing but morning glories in that 1 acre.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
No, thank you.
You're
okay,
welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You bet, Judy. Thanks for listening.
Bye. Yeah, bye.
One of the emails from yesterday from Annette, she says, I have a Siberian elm that has been trimmed about 10 years ago. It also suffered some damage in the ice storm several winters ago. Lately, the several large limbs, about 12 inches in diameter, that had been trimmed have crashed to the ground. Is this a sign that the tree is diseased? What would you recommend?
We just took out 2 Siberian elms in our backyard, if that's any indication to you. They are a very weak wooded plant. And they also get something called wet wood. And if you've looked at it, you might have noticed that the branches that fell down were discolored, sort of a rusty orangey color or blondish. Since you've had major limbs crash down, it's usually a sign that the tree is in decline. And since they are brittle, they often don't fall the way you think they're going to when you cut pieces off of them. And I really want you to get a certified insured arborist to take care of that tree for you, unless somebody has possibly a death wish, because they snap. Siberian elms snap the way when they cut, and you think you have it under control, and then you don't. So that's a tree for the pros.
Anne in Delaware, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Anne.
Hello.
Hi.
My neighbor and I have a wall of long-needled pine trees, about 20. I think they're called white pine.
Okay.
And they're about 20 to be a barrier against the railroad. Mm. And I noticed that there is an awful lot of yellow in the middle of all the trees. Does that mean they're dying, or is it just a seasonal thing?
It is a seasonal thing. It's called annual needle drop. And we tend to think of evergreens always being green, but all evergreens do lose some of their needles over time. They don't keep all of their needles all the time. So what you're seeing, and as long as it's in the interior of the tree and you're seeing it on this whole row and it looks uniform, that's what you have. And on white pines, I think the needles last 1.5 to 2 years before they drop. So that's what you're seeing. Now, if you see problems on the tips, that's another issue. But if it's interior, you're okay, because this is the time that it happens.
The tips look beautifully green and
good.
Healthy.
Okay.
It's just the inside is sort of a golden look to all the trees.
So think of that as your golden fall color for your white pines. And enjoy it, and then next year they'll be just as beautiful.
Thanks, Anne. Thanks for that call, and thanks for listening. Teresa in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Teresa.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I have Tukey's book on organic lawn care, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to implement his recommendations. I got a soil sample from Ohio Earth Food, and they make organic recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told to get some rock, soft rock phosphate and apply it, and I'm not finding it in the standard garden stores.
And it's not easy to find it in the standard garden stores. And this is very similar to a question that I received via email. Let your garden centers know what you want.
Okay.
Tell them that you are doing organic lawn care. And you will not be alone because more and more people are moving towards that. The other option is Ohio Earth Food does sell soft rock phosphate.
Yeah, I'm thinking if you order a lot of it.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. So you can go up and get it. Or yeah. you can pay a huge delivery charge. You can take a nice trip up to, let's see, where is it? They're between Akron and Canton on the east side. So it's, do you
That's
know, have
hike.
Any friends up there? you have a friend with a truck? Go out for dinner? I wish I do not know of a local source, but now I am going to start asking around and seeing if someone will carry it. You know, some of the people that might start carrying it will be like Kurtz Brothers or Ohio Mulch, some of the bigger companies that carry bulk items. But I have a feeling if you tell your favorite garden center that this is what you're looking for, they might start getting it in.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Right.
Thanks, Teresa.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Email from Susan in Clintonville. She says, I have a crimson Mandevilla mm-hmm. that did beautifully all summer on my back porch in a container. I have read that these can be grown inside. Do you think I could trim back the plant and bring it inside for the winter?
Yes, I have done so. And the recommendations are very similar to the lantana in that you do not want to overwater it. You don't want a soggy plant. You don't want it to go bone dry. It's a tropical plant. It likes a warm area, but it also likes some of that humidity. And again, our winter homes are dry unless you humidify them, so you'll need to mist them. Or, like I recommended, find a beautiful bowl, some gorgeous rocks, and keep some water in that bowl and let that evaporate in the air around your plants. I have been more successful bringing the Mandevilla over in my greenhouse, but I believe, I know people bring them over in their houses too, but do cut it back.
Okay. And David of the Jewish Bridal Veil fame, welcome to the show.
Good. Thank you very much. Thank you, Deborah, for taking my call.
Yes.
I guess wanted to provide some extra clarification with my question. When I had first purchased these bridal veils, and I know that they do go by a few different ethnicities per se.
Yes, they do.
I had purchased three of them at the beginning of the spring and hadn't really thought with any foresight as to what I was going to do with them over the course of the winter. Mm-hmm. And our indoor real estate is at a prime premium. So I guess to get some further clarification from you, you're not suggesting that I put those in the cold garage for the winter season. Is that right?
I would not suggest that. I've never tried that. I have always grown mine in the house. In fact, that was one of my favorite plants in college just because I liked the way it looked. It was a hanging mm-hmm. plant in the corner of the room. It does suffer some dieback on the top, so I would cut it back and then it would grow out again. So, but I don't know what it would do in the garage. I know you cannot freeze the roots, so if there's any danger of it freezing in the garage, that would be a problem. But maybe if you put it in a cool space that doesn't freeze, cut it back. I mean, since your indoor space is at a premium, what do you lose by trying it? And if it, right. if you are successful, you don't have to buy new ones next year.
Exactly. I put one of them on the dining room table already, which is actually a south side facing room mm-hmm. and the sunshine from that. I mean, that plant has taken off more inside now than it ever had outdoors all summer long.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested to see what happens. So
yeah, keep it trimmed. You know, so put one in the garage, do an experiment, one in the garage, one in a dark room and one on the kitchen table and see what happens.
Okay. I'll get back to you on that.
Oh, I'd love to hear. Thank you.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, mm-hmm. David.
Bye.
614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call and talk to Ohio's Garden Sage, Deborah Kanapke. We have an email from Carrie.
Okay.
She says, I am moving this fall and would love to take some of our resurrection lily bulbs with us. Does Deborah have tips on digging them up and when to plant? I will not have a permanent place to plant them for several months, and I am wondering how to store them. I love these flowers, and I really want to take some with us.
Okay.
Resurrection
lilies. Yes. Lycoris squamigera. That was for you, just to, so you know that.
It's a midgera.
It's a Lycoris squamigera. Anyways, it's a great plant. As long as you know where those bulbs are and you can dig them up now, you have a couple options. You can dig them up, put them in some pots, put some soil over them, keep it slightly moist, and keep them in a cool place where they will not freeze. So if you have an interior wall in the garage and it doesn't freeze, that's a good place for it. And then in the spring, just pop them in. You may lose your first season of flowers. You will get some type of leaf coming up, but you will have your resurrection lilies. I know that you can also store them in, like, say, onion sacks, you know, the plastic, and in a box of either packing material, Excelsior, whatever, in a cool place that does not freeze.
Okay. Hope that helped, Carrie. Brian in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Hi, thank you. Hey, I'm so glad you're on, Deborah. I learned
thank you.
So much. I learned so much every time I listen to you on Ann's program. So thank you, first of all.
Thank you.
Sure. Now, listen, you sort of touched on this earlier, but I just planted two Norway spruce trees. They're pretty big. They're like mm-hmm. 12 to 14 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
And just one of them has a pretty large area of browned out needles that it is interior, but it's just sort of a maybe one, like 25% of the tree on the interior. And I'm a little concerned, should I feed them somehow?
Okay. By interior, is it evenly distributed through the interior or in one spot?
It's kind of in one area. Yeah.
Okay.
Like one quadrant of the tree.
That would be a little bit more of concern to me because usually when it's an annual needle drop, it is kind of a uniformness within the interior of the tree. As to fertilization, a fall fertilization couldn't hurt what you, and with all this water, you certainly don't have to worry about watering it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, look on Facebook. I will put an arrow to here for evergreens, fall fertilization for that, and on the All Sides page, because I need to check that. I'm not positive whether fertilization is recommended for evergreens in the fall or not.
Okay.
It might be more of a spring thing for them, but I need to check that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Right. Thanks, Brian. We're talking with Ohio's garden sage, Deborah Kanapke. Questions or comments, we love to take them by the phone, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to their Facebook page, and you can tweet us at Ann Fisher, WOSU. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Last week on Car Talk, once again, we were brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant.
He knows everything about cars. And here's what he just suggested. Take off the carburetor and put it in the dishwasher. Now, where would we be without a guy like that? Where would we be?
Where would we be? For more clear and concise car advice, join us this week for Car Talk.
And Car Talk tomorrow at noon on 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Stay right here in 20 minutes beginning at 11 o'clock. It's All Sides Weekend and a discussion of scary movies just in time for Halloween and also a look at Columbus's Day of the Dead celebration. Join us for All Sides Weekend at 11 o'clock.
Support for 89.7 comes from the College of the Arts and Sciences and OSU Theater, presenting Living Out, a witty drama exploring the challenges faced by today's working mother, October 27th through November 6th at the Rife Center. Tickets and details at 292-2295.
Receive daily updates from our station by liking WOSU Public Media on Facebook or follow WOSU News on Twitter. Another way to connect with us is by signing up for one of our e-newsletters at wosu.org/email. Partly sunny later today, a high of 52 degrees, mostly cloudy tonight, a low of 32. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. I can see a few of you waited till the last minute to give us a call, but hang on and give our screeners a chance to get to you. Don't be patient.
I'm talking fast as I can.
My guest is Deborah Kanapke, Ohio's Garden Sage, and we want to get to all of your questions. You can just hang on the line right now, 614-292-8513, and also you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. An email from Angel. She writes, "Where I live, there is this tree with fruit that look like really ugly grapefruit. They have a rough, bumpy skin of a yellow to light green color. The fruit drop every year about this time. Do you know what this might be?" Now, I think it's the fruit I always call the brain fruit.
The brain balls.
It's gross looking.
Well, it's
unless
okay.
You know
what it is. It's an Osage orange.
Right.
And its botanical name is Maclura palmifera. Doesn't that sound pretty? This tree is tough. They used to plant it for it to be fence posts back in the olden days. Its wood breaks axe heads.
Wow.
It is amazingly tough, hard. It's very difficult to work. When you see something made out of Osage orange like a bowl, somebody had to work like the Dickens to make it. So that's what you have. And yes, we used to call them brain balls. We used to throw them at each other in the fall. You know, it was a game. And boy, they hurt.
And I know, I was going to say, I know people who have twisted their ankles.
Yes.
Running down a side, you know.
So that's
jogging.
What you have. And it's a tough tree. It's a native tree. I like it, but then, of course, I like weird stuff. So,
well, that brings up a good question. Is there any plant you don't like?
A plant that's put in the wrong place.
Okay.
There are some plants I do not like. I will admit it. And I know I'll get hung for this one. I do not like Stella d'Oro daylilies, but I like a whole bunch of others. But that particular one, for some reason, the color gets to me.
Huh.
You know, and it's funny because other people love them to death. But, you know, thank goodness there's so many other beautiful daylilies. I don't have to have Stella d'Oro in my garden. I have about 20 others.
Right.
But that's one that I just don't like. It's an extra credit question for my students on a quiz.
Which
daylily does Deb hate?
Have you ever been to the Lily Fest?
No, I haven't.
I think we've talked about that before. I guess I have been to it, but I wrote a story about it several years ago. I'd love to get back down there. It's down in Hocking Hills. And you can easily just Google that, Lily Fest, Hocking Hills, and you can learn all about that. But let's get to some calls.
Okay.
Because, boy, are they stacking up. Sharon in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello. Can you tell me what would kill mulberries? Off of a tree if you don't want to kill the tree or the bush. I have a 20-foot bush.
So, but you don't want the berries. But
I don't want the berries.
Okay. You're kind of out of luck. There are some, there's something called Florel that will reduce fruit set, but I don't know if it works on mulberries. There are mulberries that are non-fruiting types, but that would mean you'd have to take out the one you have and put the non-fruiting one in. I do not have a good answer for that because I know the birds love them and then they leave purple stuff all over the place.
Okay.
So I'm sorry, I don't have a better answer for you on that one.
Good luck, Sharon. Thanks for the call, Sharon. John in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, John. Hello, John.
Did we lose John? Lost John.
John, are you there?
Silence.
Lori in Hilliard, you're on the air. It's your lucky day. John's gone.
Hi, Lori.
Yes. My husband is planting a windmill palm. Actually, he's had it in the backyard for 2 years, and he wants to enclose it to protect it, and he needs to know when it goes dormant.
Palms don't normally go dormant. Basically, what he needs to do is set up... Is he going to be putting sticks in the ground and wrapping it in burlap and then putting mulch around it?
Yes, he did that last year, but it seemed to get some, you know, it seemed to be weathered. You know, some of the ends were burnt, so he cut those off, and it's a real slow grower. Anyway,
right.
But he had read someone from Canada that had enclosed them, and it seemed to help them.
Well, enclosing them definitely helps. As to it going dormant, our winter kind of makes it slow down, but it doesn't normally go dormant. There is a book, Palms Don't Grow Here.
He has that.
Good. Then if he has any questions, he needs to call David down at Miami University and ask him specifically. But in closing, it will definitely help.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. You're welcome.
Thanks, Lori.
Right.
Bye. Bye. John in Columbus, are you there yet?
Do you possibly mean Sean?
Sean.
Oh, Sean.
We'll take Sean.
That's okay. It says John, just for the record, but yeah, Sean, that's who we want.
It
Sean.
Is a variation, isn't it?
Thanks for taking my call. In fact, it's very timely, this show. I just received a Marienberry bush from my grandfather's garden on the West Coast, and he sent it in a box wrapped in damp towels, and I'm not sure what to do with it at this point for the winter. I'm afraid I might lose it.
What I would do is I would put it in the ground. You can still put it in the ground now. If you have a protected location, that might be a little bit better. But the other thing you can do once it loses its leaves, take some of the leaves you have in your yard and make sort of a, give it a mulch around it. Not that you really want it to pack down, but just protect the plant so it doesn't heave in our freeze-thaw cycles.
Okay.
And go out in the middle of winter and check to make sure it hasn't pushed itself out of the ground, and just talk to it and give it some loving care.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
you're
Sean.
Welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Paul in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Hi. I have about bonsai trees. I have a couple of miniature red maples in the past and have never been able to get them through the winter. I need some hints.
Oh, gosh. You know, I've killed a lot of bonsai myself, and not on purpose. I would suggest, if you want good information on how to overwinter a red maple inside, you check with the bonsai folks at Franklin Park Conservatory. But I will tell you that red maples don't really like coming in. They're an outside bonsai. If you see the bonsai at Franklin Park, a lot of them stay outside. And so bringing it inside might be part of the problem.
How do you keep a container like that outside?
Well, you have to again, mulch it, shelter it, whatever. But they need a dormant phase. And when you bring it inside, it can't go dormant. And so what you're kind of working against its natural.
Right.
Yeah, it's nature. So that might be part of the problem. I was told that's how I killed my junipers. I should have left them outside. Hmm. And so I don't have a real good answer on that, but I bet if you call Franklin Park Conservatory, they'd be able to send you to someone who could tell you how to do it well.
Thank you, Paul, for that call. Jackie in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Jackie.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I have a quick question about a butterfly bush. This is the third year for it. The first year, my dog jumped on it, and the little branches snapped. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Last year was a better year, but this year, and I assume maybe it's because of all the rain, it's just really grown and it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And my question is, do I cut that back or do I just leave it alone?
Usually I cut back my butterfly bush in the spring. I take it down to about a foot and a half. A lot of times the shoots, if we have a tough winter, the upper part of the shrub will die anyways. It's not always totally hardy. The shoots are, but the roots are. And so you will often get new growth from the roots, and you will get growth from the lower part of the stem. In our mild winters, you'll get growth on the whole thing, but then it's so big it often grows out of its space. So prune it to where you want it in the spring, but not now.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're
welcome. Enjoying your show.
Thanks, bye-bye. Jackie. Mark in Lincoln Village, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Well, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I've got quite a bit of vermiculite, and I'm wondering, it's a mica that's been heated, and where I live out here, it's mostly all clay, and maybe that'll help, or is there some kind of thing that's bad about it?
Okay. Vermiculite is expanded mica with high heat. I would not suggest putting it in your soil because what vermiculite does is it, as it breaks down, it gets slimy. If you've ever used it in a potting mix, it compacts down. In a potting mix, I'm seeing it not being used quite as much just because of how it compacts. I wouldn't put it in the soil. If you're looking for a way to get rid of it, you might consider adding it to the compost pile and seeing what it does in there. I don't know what it would do, but I wouldn't put it in the soil.
Okay, Mark. Thanks for that call, Mark. Judy in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Judy.
Hello. As we speak, I'm looking at a plethora of green tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have any hope that they're going to all ripen before the frost. What is a good way to bring them in, help them get ripe inside?
Well, we did. Last time I was on, we talked about fried green tomatoes and all kinds of recipes. And maybe we'll have to resurrect those. Some of those tomatoes may turn into rosy tomatoes that you can use. They won't have the full flavor of your summer ones. But in the past, what I have done for ones that have started to turn color is I put them upside down on newspaper, not touching, in a cool space, and waited for them to dry, or not dry, but to color up. If they don't color up, then they rot. And then they go into the bad compost pile because they might be carrying diseases, and I don't want that to infect my next year's tomatoes. But look at pickled tomatoes, green tomatoes. They're tasty.
Green tomato relish is really, really good.
Yeah. So there are things you can do with it, and if you don't see any sign of disease, then you can put it in your good compost pile. I have done that, and then had volunteer tomatoes.
Have you ever known of anybody just to cut off the plant and bring the whole plant in and hang it upside down, like in your basement? Or
I have never done that, but I think what would happen is your tomatoes would let loose, and then they would bounce on the floor, and then you'd have damaged tomatoes, and then for sure they'd rot.
Okay. Yeah.
Because the natural response of the plant would be to abscise the fruit.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah. Have fun.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Judy.
Bye.
An email from Ying in Dublin. What are some of the concerns one should have when planting a tree near a house? Our foundation is prone to leaking. I worry the tree will trap water around the foundation and its penetrating root system. Could your guest talk about this issue? So how far away to plant a tree from a house? Deborah Knapke?
Yeah. Okay. That's one of my pet peeves, is planting trees too close to the house. Because no matter what kind of tree it is, its roots are going to push against the foundation. Do not plant, well, if it's an oak, it needs to be out in the lawn, not next to your house. If it's one of the smaller trees like crab apples, you can, especially the miniature ones, you can get away with 5 to 7 feet away from the foundation.
People put like dogwoods and those kinds of trees
closer. They put them really close, and some of those dogwoods would get bigger.
if they were
further away, although there's a catch-22 there. I don't know if that's the exact term, but dogwoods like some protection. And so if they're too far away from the house, they're not getting that protection. They're sort of an edge of the woodlands tree. Dogwoods, I don't like to see any closer than 5 feet. I don't like to see anything closer in a tree than 5 feet, and that's pushing it with most trees. I once saw an absolutely gorgeous dragon's eye pine 3 feet away from the house. Its backside was flattened against the house, and the guy was saying, you know, I think I made a mistake. I have to keep on cutting the branches on the backside. So don't make that mistake. And you will have foundation issues if the tree is too close. So just avoid that.
Andrea in Mount Vernon, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Andrea.
Thank you. Last night, my husband called us outside and pointed to two finger-like things growing from the middle of one of our plants.
Finger-like things?
They're pink.
Okay.
And Google told me that they were stinkhorns.
Mm-hmm.
A fungus.
Mm-hmm.
And from the discussions online I was reading last night, it sounded like it was horrific to get rid of. And I'm wondering, you know, people are saying gasoline and salts. And then bleach doesn't kill them.
They come back. They smell horrible. We haven't smelled it yet. We haven't touched it. But there's another one growing right next to it. So
And this is on a plant or in the ground?
It's in the ground. It's coming from the center of the plant. So it's, you know, commingled with probably an annual flower. I don't know what kind of flower it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's right in our mulch. It makes sense that it's rotting wood.
Right, because it's a fungus. And there's been, to use the previous guest's word, a plethora of fungi this year because of our rain and
our
mulch.
Lawn is
It's amazing. You know, I'm not familiar with the stinkhorn. I've never been blessed with that in my garden. but I'm going to go look it up when I get home. I've heard of them. I would imagine that if you remove the mulch and go down and look for the hyphae, those are the very thin white strings, and dig some of that out, I think you'll be able to get rid of the stinkhorn. Then again, we'll probably get a call from someone saying, it took me years.
Yeah.
So,
and this is an area, it's right in front of our house, and it's, you know, always mulched. So.
Okay. Well, I'll take a look at that, too, see what I can find. But that's a good question. I haven't had a fungi question in a long time.
Well, let me tell you, Cornell has a great video of one that is growing.
Oh, good. I'll have to look at that.
Yeah. Like a speeded up thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Growing
okay.
And then falling over. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks, Andrea.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Howard, we only have about 30 seconds, but
I wanted
to give you a chance because you were waiting so long.
Okay, thank you. I have bamboo that is getting out of control.
Uh-oh.
And I've been hacking away, making a ditch around this doggone stuff. And two questions. Is there any way to get, I'd like to get rid of it. Is there any way other than just literally physically digging it up entirely? Or will new bamboo plants still grow from the runners that are going away that I've hacked off in the main plant? Will
yes.
Will they still put up new little bamboo plants in the spring?
You will have new bamboo plants in the spring. You need to dig it up, and it's going to be a backbreaking labor. I suggest getting some young people to do that. So, and helping you out.
Okay,
Good
Howard.
Luck.
Thanks for the call. Thanks for listening. Deborah Kanapke, thank you for joining us today.
It was fun.
It was busy. I think we'll have to have you back soon.
Okay.
It's Ohio's Garden Sage, Deborah Kanapke. Look to our Facebook page. It looks like she's going to be posting some things on that later today. And thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
To protect the life of a dog who is being abused, the hero of Scott Spencer's novel, Man in the Woods, gets into a fight and accidentally kills the man abusing the dog. In shock, he thinks,
how can this be happening? And he wishes, suddenly, fervently, that there was a God.
We'll hear from Scott Spencer on the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins later today at noon. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus. And streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media. Sunshine today, a high of 52 degrees. Clouds tonight and cold, a low of 32. There's a slight chance of rain on Saturday, sunshine and a high of 51. More sunshine on Sunday, a high of 54.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Foundation, celebrating our nationally ranked businesses and nonprofit leaders, making our community stronger. With donors and funds in 33 Ohio counties, the Columbus Foundation, where your philanthropy and your community come together.
That's the theme from the classic scary movie, Halloween, produced in 1978. And when it comes to scary movies, you either love them or you hate them. Today on All Sides Weekend, we'll talk about scary movies, from Paranormal Activity to The Exorcist to Psycho. Today we'll hear about the movies you must see this weekend to put you in the proper creepy mood for this time of year. And then later in the hour, The Day of the Dead, an ancient tradition celebrated in Mexico and Latin America that has a home right here in Columbus this weekend. It's All Sides Weekend after the news on 89.7 NPR News and streaming at WOSU.org/allsides.